This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
The Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Bob McDonald, joins us live in studio right here in Charlottesville. Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for coming by.
Well, Coy, I enjoy coming on with you every month. Thanks.
What brings you to our neck of the woods? We usually talk to you on the phone from your office in Richmond, but here you are live in person. It's a rare treat. What puts you on these snow-spattered Virginia roads this week?
Well, today was just a quick tour through Lynchburg and Amherst and now Charlottesville. We had several events with some leaders in Bedford County for breakfast this morning, and then a tour at Liberty University, and then a couple meetings with media outlets in Amherst. And I was supposed to go to Amherst Elementary School Fair today where my sister teaches, but unfortunately the weather caused the cancellation of school today, so I missed that. So I'm glad to be with you in studio.
Well, welcome, welcome. The phone lines are open if you've got a comment or a question for the Attorney General of Virginia, Bob McDonald. He'd love to hear from you, and give us a call, and we will put you right through. Keith has been holding patiently on line one. Keith, thank you for the call. You're on with the Attorney General.
Thank you, Coy. General McDonald, welcome back to Charlottesville and Albemarle. Good to have you back here.
Well, thanks, Keith. Hey. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, a question for you. I remember reading in the Daily Progress probably 2 or 3 weeks ago on the front page, you had just come out with a policy or a proposal for a program on illegal immigration, something to do with providing additional authorities to local law enforcement and maybe the state police as well. So I guess a two-part question, is illegal immigration an issue here in the Commonwealth of Virginia? And what is your program precisely to address that?
Well, thanks for that question, Keith. I think that obviously with all the very high-profile national discussions last year in the United States Congress and in some respects here in Virginia, it's certainly elevated to an issue that many people are concerned about. Obviously, we're a nation of laws where we expect everybody to follow the law, follow the rule of law, which means that you enter the country under lawful means. At the same time, we're also a nation of immigrants where people from numerous countries have come here, entered the melting pot, learned the English language, and have contributed mightily to the economy. So the problem right now is, of course, with the inability of Congress to get a sweeping immigration bill passed. We've got problems with border security. We've got problems with enforcement in the states, and we certainly have some problems with the way the ICE or Immigration and Customs Enforcement is funded. And so what, after traveling around the state quite extensively the last couple of years and hearing numerous concerns by citizens about the lack of enforcement on this issue, we did some research and found out the states do have some ability under something called Section 289G of the Immigration and Naturalization Act of 1996 that gives the states the ability to enter into an agreement with the federal government to actually do civil enforcement of these immigration laws. As the Attorney General, I have no civil enforcement authority currently. So I asked the governor to enter into a memorandum of agreement with the federal government to allow both the state police and the Department of Corrections to essentially be ICE federal enforcement agents so that we could begin to and only on a limited basis, and that is those people who were illegally present and who were involved with violent crimes, rape, robbery, murder, gangs, guns, drugs, very violent offenses. And unfortunately, the governor declined to do that. I'm certainly disappointed at this time. I'm disappointed at the governor's action. And so now what we've got is we've got a number of local governments in Prince William and Herndon, and Rockingham County and others who are now petitioning the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency for their own local enforcement. So that's what we're trying to do. It is not something we've been able to do, but I'm trying to ensure public safety, particularly in the immigrant communities, by those illegal aliens who are committing crimes, to start with that group and make sure that they are detained and then processed by the INS. So we're going to keep working on that. I think it's important for public safety that we do that.
Well, I applaud you for your leadership, and I agree that if the federal government is not going to take the lead in this issue, that the states ought to do that, ought to take the lead. You know, I've always maintained that the federal government exists at the pleasure of the state, so it's good to see that the Commonwealth of Virginia is taking the lead, led by you in that regard.
Well, thank you, Keith. It's something we're going to continue to work on. There's probably 30 bills or so pending in the General Assembly this year on this immigration issue, which tells you it's obviously a concern to the elected representatives of the people, and so we'll have to see what happens at the end of the session.
Keith, thank you so much for the call. The phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you've got a comment or a question for Bob McDonald, the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia. He has joined us live in studio right here on News Radio 1070 WINA. I don't want you to speak for the governor, but certainly from a negotiating standpoint, from a political standpoint, what do you think the motivation is on the part of the governor to not want to sign on to this? Is it as simple as, hey, I don't want to see my state police officers doing the job of the federal government, and a lot of them, it's no secret, don't want to. What's your take on it?
Well, he did write me back within 24 hours a letter that I sent to him asking him to reconsider his decision, and essentially is that that logic that the state police already were heavily tasked and that he didn't want to put this additional burden on them. I disagree with that. These are things that they already are doing in their ordinary course of business, and apprehending somebody that they know to be illegal and a suspect of a crime would not be an additional burden. All the training would be provided by ICE. Secondly, he did not want to create the pattern of the states taking over responsibility simply because the federal government wasn't doing it adequately. And, I understand that, but we still have the ability. We still have concerns of our citizens. And so I think that it's time to act. And we just need to continue to put pressure, obviously, on the Congress to act and fully fund ICE so they can do their job. And then he felt that we had some other statutes in place that gave us the ability to police this problem. I fully disagree with that. The only law that we've got right now, Coy, in effect, is for a person who is an illegal alien convicted of a felony, deported from the United States, and now back in the United States, they can be detained for 72 hours. That's absolutely insufficient to police up the criminal illegal alien problem. And so that's why we're going to continue to advocate that. And I hope the governor will come around, because what he also did say that he didn't have any problem with the local governments doing it. And so, like I said, you're going to see a number of local governments, and we're going to help them every way we can, the ones that want to do it, to get the authority from ICE so that they can at least take action in their own jurisdictions. About six other states have already done this, either at the state or local level, and so I think we ought to be the next.
Well, at the very least, to be able to empower local or state, or I don't care, empower a law enforcement officer to detain someone that A, you know, has committed a crime, and B, you know, is an illegal alien.
Exactly.
If the law exists such as it exists now, where you have to let them go until proven guilty in court, I don't know. It just makes sense that if you know they're here illegally, they've committed enough of a crime to be able to detain them, and then you can put them through a process to find out if they're guilty of another crime that they were originally arrested for.
Right, and it wouldn't change the justice system for them on the state charge if they were charged. But the problem is some of the crimes they get bonded out on never to be seen again, or they may end up never getting fully charged with that crime, but they were a suspect. But either way, if we have that very limited authority during these serious criminal investigations and find someone known to be illegal, we just should not be powerless at the state level to say we can't do anything about it when we can.
Right, right. And certainly we've seen efforts in the General Assembly this year to make Virginia a very inhospitable state to someone who's not here legally.
Yeah, and I think that's the reaction because of the lack of fully addressing this in a comprehensive fashion in the Congress now, as we've got this significant number of bills. And I think it's important to note that, heck, I'm a second-generation Irish immigrant myself. We are a nation of immigrants. It's important for the culture. It's important for our economy that we have new people coming that want to be part of the American dream, that are lawfully here and providing their labor and services in a variety of fields. We just need to do it lawfully. And because what's happening is many of those folks get the benefits of citizenship, whether it's education or health care or other benefits, but either don't pay taxes or aren't fully engaged in their civic responsibilities. They don't have a Social Security number, many of them, and so they're getting benefits without paying their dues, if you will. And then there's others that actually do pay Social Security but can never get it back because they don't have a Social Security number. So frankly, the system is so broken in that respect, it's not fair either way. We just are a nation of laws. We always adhere to the rule of law. We can't knowingly turn a blind eye to a phenomenon. You know, we tried amnesty 20 years ago. We had 3 million illegal aliens at the time. Now we got 12-plus million. We just need to fix the system. People that want to come here lawfully, we ought to welcome them. People that want to sneak in and not play by the rules, that's just not the American way, and we ought to do everything we can to discourage that.
And we should. Would you agree that we should punish as well the employers and the business owners who seem to want to take advantage of this situation and not abide by the laws as well?
And there are bills in front of the General Assembly this year to address that, because as long as there's a demand for these jobs, particularly agriculture, construction, logging, some of the tough jobs where employers in Virginia can't find a ready supply of able-bodied Virginians that want to do that job. That's why they're creating the demand for people to come to this country. But that can be done in a lawful manner with temporary guest worker permits or with green cards and other things like that. What we've got now is we're condoning this underground economy. And so I think that there's got to be responsibility both on the part of the employer as well as the illegal, and police the system up at both ends.
We're talking with the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, Bob McDonnell. He joins us live in studio right here on Rose Hill Drive in Charlottesville. The phone lines are open at 977-1070 if you've got a call or a question. Comment, we'd love to hear from you. Mr. Attorney General, you were the subject of a recent blog posting by Mark Fisher at the Washington Post, who we actually had on this program last week, talking about his terrific new book on the history of radio. Mark is a terrific reporter at the Washington Post, and his blog is The Raw Fisher. And he writes about your recent release of the top 10 scams that target Virginians. And he writes, McDonnell is doing the best job I've seen in years of lining up a gubernatorial run from a lesser statewide office. He's developing an Elliot Spitzerish knack for media-friendly interpretations of his office's role. Your thoughts?
Well, except for the Elliot Spitzerish stuff, it's very nice by Mark Fisher. You know, I'm tasked by statute with being the consumer advocate for the citizens of Virginia and engage in consumer protection. This happens to be National Consumer Protection Week, which is why we've put out this sort of the top 10 scams of all the different reports we get from law enforcement, citizens, and others. And so I appreciate Mark's comment, but it's really just frankly doing my job. You know, we're in the cyber age now, Coy, where there is a whole new set of scams and identity theft operations that are going on over the internet. And we try to do this regularly. Anytime we receive some news about a new type of scam or a database breach like there was a couple days ago with about 1.8 million veterans files being missing in Alabama, anything like that, we try to make people aware and also to try to pass this important tip along, and that is you got to be careful in this age who you're dealing with on the other end of the phone, the mail, or the email, because there's so much new identity theft that has been going on. And so the tip is simply this for consumers. If you're not sure who's on the other end of the line or the email, don't give out your personal financial information, your bank account number, your Social Security number, your mother's maiden name, because that's how these thefts happen. And their scams are all the same. It's always something that sounds too good to be true. Just give up a little personal financial information and you're going to win the foreign lottery, or you're going to win sweepstakes in Africa, or there's a free government grant waiting to be deposited in your account, or you have an IRS tax refund. It's a series of different scams, but they're all sort of the same. And my job really is the more I can educate the public about what these scams are, the more people can prevent themselves from being victims. And that's a lot easier than policing up the crime and their credit after it happens.
Allison and I don't even answer the phone anymore if we don't recognize the phone number. We just don't even pick it up. And sometimes I'll get angry and I will pick it up and I'll wait till they make their pitch and I'll say, you know, put me on your do not call list. But they still manage to call. We're going to go to the phones. Scott, hold on just a minute, but I would like to let folks know what this list is. If we could go real quickly down the list so folks have an idea of Virginians in particular, what the Commonwealth is being targeted with right now.
These are typical of things around the country, particularly the internet. You know, the scam that's posted one day, a day or 2 days from now, be a new email, a new website, and a new scam. But it's all the same elements of something too good to be true, and you give up your information. We've got, I mentioned some of these already, fake federal grants or fake IRS tax refunds where they're saying that you're entitled to one of these things if you give up the number. The federal government doesn't operate that way, so any of those are bound to be a bogus. Foreign lotteries, those are violations of federal law per se, so none of those sales of federal lottery or foreign lottery tickets are legitimate. Various sweepstakes that happen by mail and telephone, you mentioned some of those, by telemarketing approaches to participate in the sweepstakes, but you've got to pay $25 here, $25 there, and the chances of winning are almost nil. And some of these folks target senior citizens who are more susceptible to these financial scams. And then there's various things like these phishing and farming scams, which are done via email, where you get, again, another offer over an email directing you to go to a website that looks like a very legitimate credit union or bank website. In fact, it's something set up by the scam artist. You are asked to apply for a credit. In return, maybe you get a $10 gift certificate. You fill out all this information, of course, including your credit information and your bank account number and your social security number. You think you're applying for something. In fact, they're just stealing your identity. So there are so many of these things. What we tell people is if you have any doubt, call the Attorney General's office, call your local law enforcement. And then if you've been a victim, we've got a victim's advocate's office, and we can actually issue something called an identity theft passport that can help people to recover from being a victim and help clean up their credit.
We're talking with Bob McDonald. He's the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia. We invite you to join the conversation at 977-1070. Scott is on the line in Albemarle County. Scott, you're on with the Attorney General. Go right ahead.
This is Scott, and I was wanting to talk about the privilege to drive in Virginia.
Hi, Scott.
It seems as though Virginia finds a whole lot of reasons to suspend somebody's driver's license, like, for example, not paying a fine, even if the fine has nothing to do with driving. And it seems like this clogs up our courtrooms a whole lot. If you ever sat in court, there's a whole lot of driving on a suspended charges. And when they suspend somebody's driver's license, I know it really, really hurts. I mean, it really cripples a person. Is there any other way Virginia can get their money besides suspending somebody's driver's license?
Well, most of the offenses that have to do with suspended operator's license have to do with either committing so many violations that you get up to 12 to 15 demerit points, or committing three or committing a certain number of drunk driving or reckless driving, or committing certain felonies with the vehicle. That's generally what gets you those things. But you are correct. There still, I believe, is a statute that allows a judge to suspend your license for failure to pay fines or costs on a previous traffic offense. I know that for some that may seem harsh, but that's a bill the General Assembly has had on the books for, I think, literally decades, and it's still the law.
I'm not sure if it went.
Scott, thank you so much for the call. 977-1070 is the phone number if you've got a comment or a question for Bob McDonald, the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Let's talk about transportation. A very open-ended question there. What are your thoughts on what's happening, what happened in the Senate? We spoke with Senator Emmett Hanger a few days ago, and he said that there's going to have to be compromise, the two sides. We were sort of told a few weeks ago that there was compromise and they had reached a conclusion, but that compromise came into the Senate and looks like it sort of exploded. What's your take from where you're sitting?
Well, the House Republican leadership met for several months, and I helped to urge my friends to make sure we had a good transportation plan that had long-term solutions for transportation, not just on money, but on quality control at VDOT, on land use decisions, on protecting the trust fund and those sorts of things. I thought there was a good plan forwarded by the House and Senate leadership. The Speaker of the House himself carried the bill, which is very unusual. And it called for jump-starting major projects with $2 billion in bonds, $500 million in statewide spending, and local self-help authority for Hampton Roads in Northern Virginia, and then some of these qualitative measures with improved accountability to VDOT land use controls and so forth that I think would have done an awful lot. Unfortunately, the bill just today, after coming out of the Senate Finance Committee last night with a lot of the fees stripped off and replaced with a statewide tax increase and $150 initial registration fee and some other things, did pass the Senate on a 23-17 vote. That's exactly contrary to some of the policies that were built into that delegate compromise previously reached between the leaders in the House and the Senate. I'm very disappointed with that result. They stripped out the money that would have been coming from the general fund. You know, our general fund budget has grown by well over 6% a year, 3% higher than inflation and population. We know we can do a better job cutting spending on non-priority things, and yet the Senate today showed that they're not willing to do that, which means they're not going to control spending. And I'm disappointed with that, but I still think there's hope. There's 10 days left, and I think there's people of good faith that want to get this done, and I'm optimistic there'll be something positive happen before they adjourn next week.
Are we back? It seems we're right back where we were last year, where the Senate wants to do things one way and the House wants to do things another. And
well, it's different. This last year, there was overwhelming support for one view in the Senate. This year, it's 23-17. It's very close. And a couple of votes switching one way or the other can make all the difference. And the approaches are closer than the approaches were last year or the year before, and there's much better dialogue between all of the leaders on this. So that's why I have better optimism this year.
And this year is an election year, so they've got to do something.
I think that's a major factor. Nobody wants to go home empty-handed and say, well, I really tried. You've got to get results. That's results build roads. Trying doesn't.
We're talking with Bob McDonald, the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia, joins us live in studio right here on Rose Hill Drive in Charlottesville. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. If you could update us, we're just past crossover in the Assembly session, so the Senate bills have gone to the House, the House bills have gone to the Senate. Update us about some of the bills that that you have advocated for this session and where we are with those.
Well, our top priority this year is to improve internet safety for children. We had a lengthy task force with a lot of the stakeholders and came up with a number of positive recommendations from educators and technology leaders, essentially tougher penalties for child pornography, online sexual solicitation, and things of that nature, more tools for police and prosecutors to investigate these technology crimes when the venues and the emails and the IMs change sometimes daily, to make sure we can find out who's doing it. And then thirdly is we're going to launch a very comprehensive public awareness campaign with DVDs and materials and PSAs all over the state to make sure parents understand that they're really the top line of defense. And I tell all your listeners to make sure they understand what their kids are doing online, know about the histories that they can look at, know about the filters they've got available for their kids, and always warn their kids to be careful about some of those chat rooms and don't go meet people at a mall that they meet online. They think it's a 14-year-old kid, it may be a criminal. We've seen too many of those cases. We're also working on property rights, protecting people's property rights in the wake of the 2005 Supreme Court case that allowed the taking of property in in Connecticut for the purpose of tax revenue enhancement. We don't think that's what our founders meant, and so we've got bills in to reform eminent domain laws so you can't take property for tax revenue enhancement, employment, economic development, or transferring to a private party. We think that's important. And also bills
and we're looking at that. You think that'll get through this session? We're looking at
a version has already passed both houses. They're not the same, so there'll be some compromise still to go to get something done, Corey. But I'm pretty confident, unlike last year where the bill got killed on the last day of the session for lack of an agreement, I feel the sides are closer this year in a substantive property rights improvement. And then we've got other things on gangs and guns and drug offenses and homeland security improvements, organ donation, a number of other things which I think are all designed to help improve public safety. One other thing I might add that we did that I think is really helpful is created a senior alert system. You were talking earlier about the Amber Alert system aimed at kidnapped or missing children. We've got a bill that's now passed both houses unanimously to create a senior alert system for those over 60 that have dementia or some other cognitive impairment so we can have an immediate coordinated search for people, for elderly people who wander. That's an increasing phenomenon in Virginia now, so we think that's a major step forward.
Is there any other state that has something like that, or would Virginia be in the vanguard on this?
We've Nobody's called it that. We think there's some other programs out there. We're the first to actually tab something like an Amber Alert designated at seniors. We asked the state police to work with us and help design it. They've done a great job. We think it's going to work, and I think it'll work well enough. Other states will follow.
When we, when Allison and I lived in upstate New York for a couple of years, a little town near Cooperstown, there was an elderly residence type of place in town. And one night in a snowstorm, one of these residents there walked out one of the doors, and it was, well, this was kind of doors that sort of lock behind you. And he couldn't get back in. He literally froze to death and died right out there on the stoop of the, like in the back or the side of the building, because he didn't know where to go out in the snow. He knew, I need to be getting this building. And he couldn't get back in, and they couldn't find him. And he was the whole time, he's on the stoop. Out back, and they just, yeah, it was just awful. But like you say, if there was some type of instant, this person is missing, you would have thought that, you know, there might be something better that we can do.
And as the baby boomers like us get older, there are going to be more people over that age. There are currently almost 1.5 million Virginians that are over 60. And as they live longer because of advances in medicine and so forth, they're going to be more than have problems with dementia. And so we're thinking this is going to be a real help.
Bob McDonald is the Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Nellie is on the line from Albemarle. Is that Nellie or Neely?
Nellie. N-E-L-L-I-E.
Thank you so much for calling. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mr. McDonald. Hello.
Hi, Nellie.
I can go ahead and talk.
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
This is about another thing about a driving law. My son went into work Monday morning and got the shock of his life. They told him his driver's license has been suspended. He has worked for a major company driving for 16 years in Virginia. And the problem was, they said he failed to turn in his license plates on a car that had been parked in the yard. He got the letter last fall, and he turned the license plates in then. Why did it take from last fall until his place of employment had told him his license was suspended instead of the DMV?
Boy, Nellie, that's I really can't explain that. That's between the local DMV office and some other agencies. The notice generally on a suspension or a failure to comply with the law generally goes out much faster than that. So that's certainly something. If you want to contact our office online, we can direct you to the right place to try to get that straightened out or get you the answers that you need.
Nellie, thank you so much for the call. And thank you, Mr. Attorney General Bob McDonald, the Attorney General of the Commonwealth. We appreciate you stopping by. We look forward to our monthly chats with you. I guess the next time we'll be talking on the phone again, but hopefully we can get you back in studio again one day.
Thanks, Coy. My pleasure.
Take care. This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at SevillePodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.